I believe that storytelling has the power to transform our lives in the most fascinating and unexpected ways. Over my career as a journalist and social entrepreneur, I met individuals whose passion and values are making this world a better place. I am Elizabeth Filippulli, and I invite you to hear the stories of some amazing, inspirational people.
Hi, my name is Sara Al-Madani, and I'm a serial entrepreneur, public speaker, and a mother. And it's an honor for me to be here and to do this masterclass, and I'm so excited to add some positive value and more knowledge to the knowledge that you already have.
Thank you, Sara. So I would like to take you back to your childhood. We would like to know more about the little girl and her dreams and how she was growing up. So talk to us about your immediate environment, your family, and also the society and the influences that you had.
Got it. So I know that when I was a baby, my family always felt like I was more mature than my age, mental-wise. I started talking when I was 9 months old. I started walking when I was 10 months old, which kind of like scared my parents, but they always felt like I had something different in me. And all I remember, like I get flashes of my past when I was a child, but my dad and my mother tell me that when I was 3 years old, I used to massage the whole family for money. I used to charge them money. And then my dad told me that when you reached 4 to 5 years old, you knew your cousins had strict parents, so they could not go outside to buy candy from the store. So you used to go buy it and resell it to them. And then at the age of 6, I started hiring my elder cousins to work for me, and I was just supervising while they resell the candy, and I used to pay them a salary. So I believe entrepreneurship is something you can learn, but I believe the characteristics of an entrepreneur you're born with. So my parents really felt like there was, they felt like there was something special, and they felt like there was something different, but at the same time, they knew this is not gonna be easy because of the way I was. And when I was 15, I was still in high school. Actually like my last year of high school, almost graduating, I just suddenly out of nowhere decided that I wanted to be financially independent, because my father taught me that whatever I want, whatever toy I want, to dress or any place I wanted to go, I had to work hard to earn it. So I learned the value of working hard and money since I was young. But then I thought to myself, why can't I be in control of that? Why can't I be in control of my decisions financially and what I want to do in my life financially? And I think this is what drove me into entrepreneurship and thinking of entrepreneurship. I don't know if this is the main reason, but I also remember that one of my aunts, my mom has 8 sisters, and one of my aunts went through a divorce. And I saw her struggle. Nobody was there for her, and she had to depend on a man that was not there anymore. And then I saw her get up and build herself and start a business, and then she did not need anybody anymore. So I think as a child, in my subconscious mind, I saw that happen, and I was like, I don't want to depend on somebody. I don't want to one day like fall down and then wait for hands to lift me up. I want it to be my own hand that lifts me up. So I guess a bit of that and a bit of me wanting to be financial independent as a child is what pushed me towards entrepreneurship. And then I was like, how do I start? I don't know, I'm so young. How do you do this? And I remember I met a guy who had a shop, like a fashion store, a male like tailor fashion store. In industrial area, you can imagine industrial area, there's no women. It's only construction workers. But he wanted to leave the country, so he asked me for 20,000 dirhams. And he said, you take the company, you take the license, you take the staff, you take everything. Just give me that money. And the 1 year rent is paid. So I was like, where the hell am I going to get this money from? I'm just a kid, and 20,000 back then, I'm 34 now, but when I was 15, 20,000 was a lot of money. So I started saving my my allowance. I started even not eating just to save my money. I didn't tell my parents what I was up to. And then I started doing side jobs without telling my family, which was against my culture because at a young age, when you're 15, a girl is supposed to be in her parents' house, protected, her parents provide for her, even as a boy when you're in that age. But I was secretly doing side jobs. Like I modeled for a while. I sold electronics. I was a promoter in a shopping mall for like a frizzy drink. And I once got caught. My mom's friend took a video of me in the mall while I was promoting Coca-Cola. And I denied it. I was like, it's not me. My mom was like, I give birth to you. That's you. I was like, no, that's not me. So I went through a lot of hardship to get the money. But in 6 months, I had the amount. And I paid it. And I got the store. I got the staff. I got the machines. I got the license. I did not know what to do. And for the longest time, my staff, they were male tailors for male clothes. They were against the idea of doing women's clothes. It took us a couple of months. Thank God I had amazing leadership skills day one. So I built a friendship. I created a base where I made them feel like we're family. And then slowly we started changing and like the evolution happened and we grew together and we started the brand. So this is how my beginning was. And I took that store that was in an industrial area to 3 branches all over UAE, fashion shows all over the world, from Paris to New York to London. So I'm known in the family, I'm called the rebel, but not basically not the bad type of rebel, but the rebel that rebels on her own weaknesses. And I would not take no for an answer. I rebel on myself. I rebel on my subconscious mind. I rebel when my mind tells me you can't do something. So I'm a rebel towards my weaknesses. And I never take no for an answer. And that's basically how my childhood was and how my whole journey started as a fashion designer in the beginning.
At what point did you tell your parents? I mean, you're 15, you've managed to collect this amount of money. You have bought the store in the industrial zone. And you already find yourself having staff in place, which you will need to train in order to make them, you know, get them to know, understand how to create women's clothes. Yeah. At what point in time did you tell your parents about it? And what was the reaction? Because as we know, many of these, you know, super successful entrepreneurs who started from a young age, they were faced with this negativity, or perhaps it could be a sense or an effort to protect, you know, the rebellious one from its own, you know, character or rebellious inclinations in order to save her money or save her time or redirect her towards, I don't know, studies that, you know, the parents and the immediate family feel are appropriate for her. So how did your family ecosystem react?
Thank God my family is very open-minded. So they were not against the fact that I wanted to do something with my life. They were against the fact of me doing it at a young age. And they wanted me, just like a typical parent, they wanted me to focus on my studies. But I knew, because I've been on the streets since I was 15. So I knew that whatever the streets taught me is nothing a book can teach me. No school can teach me. A school teaches you a lot. And it helps you a lot through life, but life teaches you a lot that a school doesn't teach you, and that teaches you how to survive life. Because a book and schools don't teach you, like in universities, they don't teach you how to become rich. They don't teach you how to deal with failure. They don't teach you how to invest your money. They don't teach you, they just teach you how to become the best employee, and basically that once you're in an entity and you're in a high position, you can achieve. So I felt like life was giving me much more than what my parents wanted me to get from life, because I looked at life completely different. So they were not supportive at the beginning. And I repeat and I say again, not because I wanted to be independent, and it was because I wanted to be independent while I was 15. So my dad took it like as a lashback. He's like, you're my child. I want to take care of you. I want to make sure you're fine. But I was like, no, I'm working. At the age of 15, girls are, my cousins were playing with their Barbies and They were like out playing with the sand and building sandcastles, and I was like running a business. So my parents could not comprehend that. They did not understand that at a young age, somebody could do that, and they were just worried. So I did not have, I did not tell them anything. I was studying and doing this at the same time. So I did not tell them anything until like I was 17. My dad was like, what are you doing? And then I told him, okay, this is what I did. And I'm not making any money at the moment, but I know I would if you believe in me. But they were like, you're just a kid. Why can't you just be like your cousins? Why can't you just be normal? And I always told my dad, I was not born to be normal. And I don't feel like normal is who I am. And I don't need to fit in somewhere. I like being different. Until the age of 20, when my dad saw the expansions and the branches and my brand was one of the biggest brands in the whole like Middle East when it came to modest fashion. He saw the traveling, the fashion shows. Then, you know, they saw the multiple branches, and they attended the opening of all these branches and the parties and all that. And I remember when I opened my last branch, which was in Dubai, my dad just grabbed the mic while I was doing an opening speech. And he, in front of everyone attending the event, we were like around 190 people, he just came and he's like, I want to give my daughter a big apology because I wasn't a supportive dad in this whole journey. And I did not believe in her. He's like, I believed in her, but I did not believe in her vision because she was young. And I was so blinded by the perfect image of having a child, which is an educated child who has a perfect job and all that. And he's like, doing something different scared me. And he just, and I was just standing there in tears because I never expected that. And ever since, my family has been my support system. And they've never left. They were always there. They're supportive. I don't come from a family that has a business background. So it's not like it runs in our family. So, you know, we're risk takers and all that. No, everyone is a normal, like they have jobs in my family. My aunts are, none of them have the businesses. I have a couple, like three or four that do, but we don't come from a business family. So it was hard for my father to understand all of this, and it was new to him. So yeah, and I believe like after that, they like my mom and dad are my biggest fans. They're my biggest support system. They're my number one go-to. And they've been there, they never left ever since. But it took them a lot to understand, which I completely understand because I have a son right now. But I'm trying not to do the same mistake again. And I'm telling my kid that he can do whatever he wants, whatever he desires. It's his life, his mistakes to learn, his success to earn. So I'm trying to teach my son, you know, the ethics my dad taught me, but not implement them in the same way.
So you mentioned before that within 3 years, if I got it right, you grew the business into three shops in the UAE. How does one get there? Because I'm sure that, you know, your story inspires hundreds of thousands of other entrepreneurs, women and men. And of course, someone wonders, in order to create a brand, in order to create a successful business, you need to take specific steps, as in branding, building a team, training that team. So human resources is very important. And you touched on it lightly before. And we would like to know more about how you trained, how you recruited the right staff, how you were growing the business, and branding is also a critical part because it is your public presence, the way you develop your messaging, the way you approach your customers, to make them fall in love with what you have created. So who guided you? Was it your inspiration, or were you somehow helped by any people? And then of course, marketing. How do we market a product? Because very often we've heard of stories of ventures that have been very ambitious with amazing potential, but they were missing something all the way. It seems that your puzzle was coming together very nicely. So talk to us a bit about that.
So basically for any business, any startup, everybody knows that the only way you can survive is by having cash flow. Cash flow is so important in a business. And a lot of the mistakes a lot of entrepreneurs do is when once the money starts coming, they start living a lifestyle of an entrepreneur, which is spending, traveling, shopping, and all that. Because this is what the media portrays entrepreneurship to us. This is what social media shows us entrepreneurship is. a Lamborghini, a castle, first class, a Gucci bag, all these things. But to be honest, that's not what entrepreneurship is about, because there are people that work for money, and then there are people that make their money work for them. An entrepreneur doesn't work for money. He makes his money work for them. So this is the education that's missing and that the media is not highlighting. But anyways, you're brainwashed in a certain way so you can remain in a certain way. So cash flow is important. I never lavishly went and spent the money I had. I never paid myself a salary for a long time. All I did was reinvest, because I knew that I had a vision. And what is the price of that vision? I paid it to reach that vision. So it's like basically saving money to buy like your favorite shoes. Every month you take a little bit of money aside, you do that, you do this, just to reach your goal. Business is the same thing. Your vision is the same thing. I saved up the money because I wanted to expand. I wanted the brand to be international. I wanted to take it to a worldwide level and all that. And I knew that costs money. So I was like, my lifestyle and my comfort and me looking all lavish and stuff, or me downsizing my spend and saving and growing. So it's a crossroad. It's a choice you make in the end, right? So everything is a choice. People blame it on life. They blame it on others, but everything is a choice. You had a contribution to everything you did in your life. You had a choice. So cash flow is important, and to deal with the business in a very mature manner, and to believe in your vision. And not to start a business because it's a trend. Your friends have a business, they're making money. You're like, okay, I want to join the entrepreneurship train. I want to do this as well. It's not a trend. You really need to be really invested 100% in this. Entrepreneurship is blood, sweat, and tears. It's sacrifice. You will lose friends. You will lose your social life for a while. You will lose a lot of things. But guess what? This is what it takes to be an entrepreneur and to reach your vision. And once you reach your vision and throughout this journey, you will really understand who's really there for you and who's not. So that's the first thing. Second thing is branding. I am like a complete believer and a sole believer in branding and in emotional intelligence and storytelling and believing loyalty, bridging loyalty and between you and the consumer through branding. So your branding, what your story is, what you're saying, customer service, all these things that make your brand a brand. I am very, like, how do I say? Like, I am very strict when it comes to my customer service, because my brand is friendly, kind, loving, loud, different, avant-garde. If my customer service doesn't say that or doesn't portray that, I failed. And if you realize, the reason why we're loyal to a lot of businesses is because of the customer service, is the way they handle us when we need them is what makes us loyal to them. So branding, customer service, story, quality of branding. It's not just, hey, I got a logo, I got a website, and that's it. No, there is quality. There is consistency. There is storytelling. So I really believe this is what builds loyalty between your customer base and your brand, basically. The third thing is a team. You can't build a dream team overnight. It's impossible. It took me 3 years to find the right team. And I don't regret it, because the wrong people prepared me for the right people. So they taught me a lot about what I don't want in an employee and what I'm not looking for. So when team works, dream works. And you need to understand that as a leader, you with a vision, you go nowhere. Without a team, you go nowhere. So as a leader, you have to put your pride and ego aside and understand that these people are the people that are going to take you towards your dream. You're a visionary person. You guide, you tell, you teach, you correct, you fix. But their job is to make you go to your vision. Therefore, the way you treat your employees, your leadership skills are very important. And it pays off. It really pays off. I had situations in my life, in my business, where I could not pay my staff salary for 6 months. And they stuck around because they were like, we believe you, your leadership skills, your ethics. You were there for us. This is how we pay you back. So leadership pays back. And this stereotype of being a manager behind closed doors with crossed legs and, you know, all high up, nobody can talk to you and all that. This is what the media portrays. It's a stereotype of a manager. I don't want to be a manager. I don't want to be behind closed doors. My leadership skills are, I serve. I was made to serve. A true leader is a person that serves. And I'm down, I'm dirty with everybody. My hands are busy. If they're busy to do their work, I do their work for them. So your leadership skills are very important. If you don't have the skill, your business won't last. The people around you won't last. They will immediately look for a better opportunity to leave you. So that's very important. And it takes time. Don't be scared that in the first year, two or three, you're firing and hiring, firing and hiring. This is completely normal. What's not normal is you hire a team from the first time on the get-go and they stay with you and they're the perfect people. It doesn't work like that. Because you discover yourself through people. You discover what you want to do in your business and how you want to grow through people. And to find people that love your business the way you do, as if it's their own, you don't find these people day one. So it's completely normal. If this is happening to you, don't panic. This is the circle of life when it comes to being an entrepreneur. It's completely normal. Last but not least is marketing. Sadly, a lot of people in the same industry, what they do is they look at each other's work and they try to copy the same version of it, but better. So if this girl did an advertising using A, B, and C, I look at her work, I get intimidated, and then I go back to my team and I say, hey, we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to do A, B, C, D, E. We're going to add E to it. So what happens, the same C minus homework gets circulated in the industry, but done differently. I don't allow my team, I don't allow my marketing team, I don't allow my secretary, my staff, my tailors, even in my tech company, we are not allowed to even look at a competitor's website. We do a competitive analysis before starting the business, but once the business starts, we are not allowed to see their updates. We are not allowed to see what's up, what they're doing, any changes they've done. To me, it's unhealthy. Because if we are really, really inspired about an idea, and then let's say the marketing person looks at the competitor's website and they see something different, they'll come and doubt what we believed in. So I believe that stick to what you believe in, go on your road, go on your path, create your own success story, create your own blueprint, throw and toss that C minus homework in the garbage and do an A plus homework and do your due diligence and grow without having to be shadowed by your competition. So I'm very, very strict, like to the extent like you get a warning if I find out in the company that you've actually looked at the competitor's work or website or even an Instagram page. We don't. We are on a path, we're different, and we love that. So I think these are the things that makes my leadership skill and my entrepreneurship skill different. And I also would not invest my time, money, in something I'm not passionate about. So if I had a business that made me a lot of money, but I had to wake up in the morning forcing myself. I had to sit with the staff feeling like, oh, I could have been doing something else right now. If that business is not something that inspires me or something that is basically I'm passionate about, no matter how much money it makes, I leave it. Because yeah, you're filling your pocket, your money, but you're emptying your body from soul. So what happens is you slowly die. And I don't like that. So I literally went back to all my businesses. I had eight at the time, and I shut down six of them. I shut them all down. I was not passionate. Every day I woke up wanting to do something different, and that's not right. If you feel like that, then you're not doing the right thing. And I took that time that I've invested doing these businesses, and I started new things that I love. And what is success? Success is making money while you're doing something you enjoy and love. This is success. Success is once you get it all, once you know, like, it's basically, I ask myself, success is what have I done for myself and then what have I done for others? So giving is important in success, because if you're only taking, you're not successful. And then it's also important to be doing something I love and making money from, and not something I dread every morning waking and going to, which is a mistake a lot of entrepreneurs do. Just because they feel comfortable, they're making the money, they stick to it. But deep down inside, they're not enjoying it. They're not loving it. They're not growing, they're not accelerating personally, they're just making money. And don't get me wrong, money is important. We all love money. Who doesn't, right? You gotta love it to attract it. You can't say, oh, I don't do this for money. Then you never attract money. You gotta be in peace with money. But money is a necessity, not a priority, which means I'm never gonna step on my ethics. I'm never gonna step on who I love, what I love, just to make money. You know, because I cannot buy ethics for money. So why would I sell my ethics for money? This is my philosophy. But is money a necessity? Oh, hell yeah, I need money. I love money. Who doesn't want to have a good life? Who doesn't want to make enough to survive and thrive and do whatever they want? I love money, and we should all love money. And if you think otherwise, guess what? That's the reason you're not making money, is because you don't believe in it. You're not attracting it. That paper never stays with you, because your energy doesn't want it. So I believe, like I've broken down how I am as an entrepreneur, and how is my mental overflow when it comes to being an entrepreneur and my leadership skills. And I think this is what makes me different. And this is what made me survive from a young age till now. Although I was, my fashion business got bankrupt in 2013. I lost everything. I was broke, no money. I had over 100 staff that I had to pay salaries for. I had 4 branches that I was paying rent for, and my checks bounced. There was 0 money in my account. And I had phone calls from the police asking me to come to the station. And I was like, man, this is exactly what I feared. This is exactly was my biggest fear. I didn't want one day for this to happen to me, but it happened now. And it was a bad partnership, you know, that went wrong, and all the money was taken. And then I sat down and I told myself, okay, if I'm going to sit down and blame him, her, or blame God or life for what happened to me, I'm never going to learn. So I better sit down and realize, how did I contribute to making this mistake happen? And that's how I grew. That's how I learned. That's how I became more successful. That's how I had the guts to go out there and start more businesses in fields that I had no experience or educational background in. That's why now I'm not even scared to take any risk or failure. Failure doesn't intimidate me. Failure is my fuel to the fire. It makes me want to discover whether I can do it or not. So being broken, failing, made me successful. It wasn't the way I work, it wasn't the way I think. I'm not lucky. I was not born special. Failing is what made me who I am today. So I looked at my contribution and I told myself, failure either teaches you or beats you. What do you want? It's your choice. I'd rather be taught, and I don't want to be beaten down and dwell in my sorrows and cry about it for years and make a change my personality so I can become a mirror of the person that hates me. Nope. I was like, I'm going to partner up with more people. I'm going to be kinder. I'm going to be nicer. The world needs love. And that failure experience, yeah, it took away my money, took away my hard work. Yes. But it did not take away this. It did not take away my heart. It did not take away my ambitions, my purpose. And it definitely did not take away my mind, because the business is not what makes you. You make the business. You are the gift. It's not the business. It's not the idea. It's not the money you're making. You started this. So you are like a bird. When your nest is broken, you go and build it somewhere else. You start all over again. And this is why I always tell entrepreneurs, in the journey of entrepreneurship, from day one, be involved. Understand how every nitty gritty goes, because if one day this goes down and all the people that helped you build it go, you can rebuild it all over again.
It is amazing how your passion and dedication come across. And of course, you talked about money, which is a very big part of entrepreneurship for two reasons. A, because someone needs seed funding to start, right? And so there is, of course, this minority of entrepreneurs who start making money very early on in the process. So they are able to self-fund the venture. But yeah. The majority, the vast majority of entrepreneurs, they need to take their venture, their startup rather, at a stage, and then they reach out to investors, either angel investors or then when it gets bigger, to VCs. Did you ever reach out to investors? And when you had to do this restart after, you know, the setback that you suffered in 2013, and of course this amazing comeback, how did you find the money to do it again?
So basically, when the bankruptcy happened, I had to pay a lot of money here and there. So what I did is I borrowed from friends, from family, and I borrowed from banks, and I stood up to my mistake, because I contributed to that mistake. Even if somebody took everything away from me, I helped that. And I knew where I went wrong. So I borrowed money just to lift myself up. And because I knew it all from day one, I just restarted the whole, rebooted the system and did it all over again and paid all the people back. But have I reached out to investors and VCs and raised money? Yeah, I did 3 times, actually. I have a company in Los Angeles that does electronics and robotics and tech. So we've raised $10 million for that company, and I've raised it alone. And I remember walking into the investors' office, and I had no experience in investment, but I love it because I told you my failure experience made me like much stronger. And I was like, if I lost all my money and I was broke one day, how bad is it to walk into an investor's office not knowing what to say? It's not that bad. You know, it made my expectation and my fear level, the failure experience that I had set the bar so high. So now it takes a lot to scare me, you know? So I walked in and deep down inside, I knew, my friends told me, yeah, you got to have a business plan. You gotta have like the financial plan ready. And I'm dyslexic. I have a dyslexia and dyscalculia. So I cannot do finance, I cannot do numbers, and I cannot do reading. So I could not prepare a pitch or a deck. I could not prepare a financial thing, but I had a shot to meet an investor and I went. So deep down inside, I believe that the right person who's going to give me the money is going to believe in me and is not going to believe in a piece of paper, because I can pay somebody to write to do this for me. I can pay someone to pretend I know it all. But once the money is given to me, I can burn all their cash. So what does an investor invest in? An idea or a human or the person? And this is the debate I had in my mind. People told me, no, they invest in the idea. I was like, yeah, but what if I wasn't the best person to manage the idea and I lose it and someone comes and does it better than me? What are they really investing in? So I was against the idea of I need to be prepared on paper and traditionally to meet an investor. I walked in and I told them, I was like, listen, I'm dyslexic, I have dyscalculia, but I'm a great leader and I don't give up and I've been through hell and back and I'm here after losing everything I've done and I believe in my vision. And if you believe in my vision, then I want you to be my investor. Otherwise, I don't want dumb money. And when I said that, their eyes opened up and they're like, oh, you know, and the guy was like, for once we had someone who walk in here and try to show us what we need, which is a personality. When investors invest in people, the first thing they look at is, are you investor fit, personality-wise? He will try to get you angry. They will ask you questions that will like make you feel down about your vision. They will try to break you and mend you because they're trying to test you. They're going to give you millions of dollars. Are you worth that millions of dollars? And you have people that have like the perfect pitch on paper, break down, and become aggressive and become defensive, and they walk out insulting everybody because they love their vision so much. But if you love your vision so much, you should be open to feedback. You should be open to constructive feedback. You should be open to change. And I told them my vision and they said, yeah, but I think you got to change this and that and this. I was like, well, I told you guys, I don't want dumb money. I want people who have the brains and the money. Dumb money, I can find it anywhere. I can fake documents and plans and numbers, and I can go get money from anybody right nowadays. But I need someone who has the vision that I have to take care of that child, the business, like I would. And they were so happy. And I was granted $10 million for my project right away on a seed investment, a seed round. So as an advice for anyone out there, yes, do your traditional work, get your paperwork done, get your numbers done. But if you don't have the personality it takes, no one's going to invest in you. Because you can take that money and that idea and burn it to the ground. Investors invest in people. They invest in personality. And if you don't have what it takes, then you don't deserve the money that you take. So this is what happened. And then the second time, I also raised money in the same way. I had a business plan. I didn't have a financial plan because I told them, listen, I can give you numbers. I can just blab numbers out. But the reality is, are these numbers going to be done? Are these numbers the reality we're going to have? And the truth is, I was like, no. The reality is I have a vision and I am a great leader and I'm never going to let you down and I'm going to fight for this until the end. And this is what you need. You need someone to protect your money. And also you need to show the investors that you want to take care of their money. So what I tell investors is, I am on social media. I know so many famous people. The budget we're going to allocate for marketing, we're going to only spend 30% of that because I have the connections and I have what it takes to get it all for free. So they love it. Investors love people who will tell them, yeah, give me $10 million, but watch me save that money for you and spend it only on what's necessary. They love that. But if you come up with a plan, hey, okay, I'm spending $1 million here, I'm spending $1 million there, they tell you, why are you taking a salary day one? because I want a salary. They're going to, you know, I've told my investors, I don't want a salary for 3 months, 4 months, 6 months sometimes. I want this business to thrive. I'll do whatever it takes to prove to you. So investors love people who have the personality, not just the idea. The idea, tomorrow someone can come and copy your idea and do it better than you. And we've seen this happen to the biggest companies in the world, where small startups, you know, pull the carpet right under their feet, and they literally put them in a situation where they couldn't enter so many territories in the world, and they took over. So believe in yourself before you believe in your idea when you walk into an investor's room.
One of the questions that is in every startupper's mind is, okay, let's say that I find my way to angel investors and eventually to VCs, but when I know that I have a great idea or a fantastic venture with incredible potential for business, for profit, the moment that I go into a room full of VCs and they will be willing to invest in me because they like my passion and they like the venture, they would like to take the biggest share. So I will find myself being the minority shareholder. Is this something that you came across? Is this something that you think is inevitable, and someone, an entrepreneur, should be ready to part with the best shares of their business? Best part?
100%. I've been through situations like these where in the beginning, you have to fight for more, okay? Fight for more. You're not going to lose anything. Tell them, are you willing to give me, if they say, we'll take, keep 60% of the company, you keep 40, and it's your idea, you've already created the technology or whatever, the business plan and everything is ready, and you came up with the whole concept, you tell them, listen, can we do 50-50? And give them a chance. Show them you want this. It's okay. Don't be shy just because they're giving you money. It's not charity. They're giving you money so you can double it up for them and give it back to them. So it's a business. It's a business transaction. It's not charity. So don't feel ashamed to speak your mind, and don't feel ashamed to speak your mind worrying you might lose them. You won't lose them. If they agree to invest, that means they really are sold. And VCs are not easy to be sold. So ask for more, but I also say, if they don't agree, go for it. Because right now, the evaluation of the company is zero. There's nothing. That equity does not mean anything. Whether it's 20% you keep, 10% you keep, 30%, it means nothing. It has no worth right now at the beginning. Let's say in 2 years, the company is worth $800 million and you become a big success. 30% of $800 million is not bad. It's a lot of money. So I met a lot of people who would kill their business idea, who would kill a business transaction, who would kill an investment opportunity because they were so greedy for more. They wanted to keep more. They wanted to keep more. They wanted to keep more. But what you don't get is once you grow, you'd have to dilute. So you'd have to shed some skin off as well. So that process of I want to have the biggest share is a very, very old school mentality. It's not a modern mentality. A modern mentality is that I have a friend who owned a huge share in Spotify. Diluted. Now he owns only 2%. But 2% of the worth of Spotify is a lot of money. And you need to understand that right now, those shares mean nothing. So if you have an opportunity where you can make your dreams come to life, and you found the best partner that can give you not only money, but give you the facility and give you the partnership to grow, and they have the experience it takes to help you grow, grab it right away. And whatever they offer you, fight for more. If you can't, take it. Unless it's like completely unfair where they tell you this is 5% and we're keeping the rest. It's like, come on, this is ridiculous. Now, right now, you're not investing in me. Right now, you're using me. But if it was a fair transaction and you are given less, it's okay. This is completely normal. It's not about how much equity you have. It's about how much you can grow the company and how much the equity you have is worth in the long run. So don't be narrow-minded and closed doors just because you want to feel, your ego wants to feel like you are on top of the game and you own more. No, it's fine. I've had companies where they've given me 30% and kept the rest, but I had a seat on the, I had a voice on the board seats. I had a seat on the advisory board. I had a say. They could not sell anything in the company without me agreeing to it. So I put rules. Fine, you want to give me less shares? I'm putting rules. And they agree. So negotiation is always open. Don't be shy to negotiate with investors. And I put my rules, and it was strict rules, and they agreed to it. They completely agreed to it. And later on in the future, when what I tell my investors is, look, if I raise money within the next 2 years, I'm not the one to get diluted because my shares are vested in 2 years. So I own them completely in 2 years. Right now, I cannot sell. I cannot do anything. But you as an investor, you dilute. Some agree, some don't. So there is no, what I hate about the investment world and entrepreneurship world is lawyers teach you what's written in the book. While this is not carved in stone, this information was made by a man for man. Therefore, another man can change that. And I go, I make up my own rules. They sound ridiculous sometimes, but they work. So come up with your own rules. You don't have to follow the book. And investors, some of them are flexible for change. So don't be scared to offer different things, offer solutions, offer different things that will make you feel more comfortable if the equity was given to you was less than the equity kept by them. Don't kill opportunities because opportunities don't grow, they never grow on trees.
You talked before about the ecosystem and the investment and investors yes. ecosystem in California. How do you compare the Silicon Valley with the ecosystem in the UAE and the wider MENA region? Is it as dynamic or as thriving? Yeah. Is it as open-minded towards innovation? It would be great to have a picture from you because you know both worlds very well.
Yeah. So I don't think it's a fair comparison because the United States has been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years, while the UAE is only 40-something years old and we've accomplished so much in these 40 years. So I believe the UAE is still learning, growing very fast and still learning and understanding. And, you know, it's a beta version. Whatever we do in the UAE, we're testing what works, what makes people happy, what makes people thrive, what makes entrepreneurs want to stay. So the UAE is like, I swear to God, the rules are, they change every single couple of, like every couple of months to better, easier, cheaper, better. Why? Because they are learning. It's a young country. The investment of the world in the US is old. It's been there for so many years. They understand it. They understand the risk that comes with it. When it's an angel investor, if the project dies, you don't owe them any money. So they understand that you can believe in a person and give them all your money. Here, it's a bit harder because, as I said, it's still new. People are not used to these things. They are scared. They're worried. They don't understand how big this can get. Innovation is becoming big in the UAE. But as I said, you're comparing a country that has been doing this for hundreds of years to someone new. It's like someone who has been swimming in the deep for 10 years and then a child who just passed his swimming class. He's not gonna swim comfortably. He is swimming, he's trying, he's doing his best, but he's scared. There's still fears, there's still doubts, there's all that. But the other person has been swimming for 10 years. So it's an invalid comparison, but from if we want to still compare, I'd say there's a lot of opportunity in the UAE. There's a lot of investors that are open, but in the US it was easier because they are not new to this. So this is the best version I can give, but I've raised money in the UAE and it was easy, to be honest. But it wasn't as easy as the States because there's access, there's places to go, there's people to meet. Here, investors are not out and about in the public. So you really have to know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody so you can reach an investor.
Let's move to the social impact part, because I think that this is very important, especially, you know, we live currently in a world that has proven to be very uncertain, very complex. Yes. We're trying to try and create a new normal for all of us, our economies, our societies, us as human beings. And I think that the whole idea of leading with values, operating with kindness, concern, caring for other people, and how that manifests itself through our business is going to be critical. So I would like to hear from you about your idea on social impact, on supporting others, our societies, what initiatives you have launched under your multiple businesses. You are a restaurant owner, you are a tech entrepreneur, you've been in fashion business. Innovation is a word that makes you tick. So who knows what comes next, you know, in the future. But how do you combine? How do you always try to cut across social impact?
Social impact kindness is not a trend for me. So it's not something I do when I'm free. It's not a hobby. It's not a tick in my resume so my company can look good in the public. And we do a lot of work internally that we don't speak publicly about because we feel like we don't need recognition to do what's right. I don't need it. I don't need you to recognize what I'm doing so I can feel like I'm doing something right. It's between you and yourself and that's it. So I'm kindness and giving is part of my personality, embedded in my business plan as a person and in my soul. So I am a soul believer in giving back. I'm a soul believer in, and this is why I told you success is what you do for yourself and what you do for others. If success was just making money and having trophies and awards and sitting on like high chairs and sitting on boards and everything, then why when I'm gone, none of that comes to the grave with me? What you leave behind as a legacy is the feeling you made people feel. And if you ask me, Sarah, what do you want from this life? My answer for the past 5 years is I never want to be forgotten. And for me to be able not to be forgotten, whatever I do in my life, I serve from my heart 100%. I don't say I'll do this, but I will do this, but I'll put my guards up. I'll do this, but I'll build a wall because I want to protect myself. I don't do that. I am a sole believer in giving 100% back to society, in supporting people, in that knowledge is for free. If I gain knowledge, I have to pass it to people. People know on social media even that they can just walk into my office anytime and we can have a pep talk, we can sit together, we can, on Instagram, like the amount of women that I support because I'm a public speaker, so I give them like speeches about things internally. I take my time and I really believe in it because 4 years ago, I went on a self-discovery journey. I wanted to know what's my purpose in life, who I am, why am I here? I'm pretty sure I was not created to start businesses and make money and make children and that's it, and that's life. I'm pretty sure every single one of us has a message and we need to discover what's that message. Why are we existing on this earth? What is our purpose? Why are we here? So I went on a self-discovery journey and I found out my purpose in life, and my purpose in life is as much as I say it, sometimes people laugh, especially when I talk about it while I'm giving speeches. My purpose in life is people. I love people. And I feel like, I don't know if you know, there's a term called light worker. Have you heard about it? All right. No, so your homework today is to go Google what does light worker mean. So light worker is a person that believe they are very spiritually aligned and they were born to go through hardship, to go through failure, to go through pain, to endure a lot of things in life so they can pass that knowledge to people, to save people from the suffering, from the pain, from going through the same mistakes and all that. So we believe we were born as messengers to help people. And I completely believe I'm a light worker, and I have met so many light workers like me around the world when I travel and all that. And we do believe and we see life the same way. And As weak as it sounds to some people, I believe that being kind and good to people all the time, regardless of what you go through and how they treat you, is not a weakness. It takes a lot of strength. Weakness is just to decide to be passive and to not care and to be careless and rude and to not care. That's the easiest thing to do. Easiest. Close down, close up, no one comes next to you, and that's it. You're right on your own. So when people tell me, Sarah, you're too kind, you're too naive, you're too nice, I don't think it's a weakness. I think it takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of work to control yourself, to manage yourself mentally and physically, to be okay with giving and being kind regardless of what you go through in life or how you treat it in life. And it takes a lot of energy. It's not easy. So when people tell me, you know, you're never going to be happy because you're too weak, I'd rather be weak and humble and vulnerable than to be someone who's like full of hate and anger and unavailable and unhelpful. And if this is weakness to people, then whatever puts you to sleep, I'm weak then, have it your way. But I know deep down inside it takes a lot to do that. And I really, really, really believe in karma. And I don't believe in karma just on like a big level. Like for example, if I kill somebody, karma will come. Or if I cheat on somebody, karma will come. I believe karma happens in patterns every day throughout your whole entire life. every single minute of your life. I'll give you a simple example. So let's say I was coming out of the car and I was heading to a meeting and I bumped into a girl, and instead of like smiling and apologizing, I was like, watch your way. Who do you think you are? Like, what the hell? Just because I'm in a hurry and I'm late. And then I go up to the meeting, and while I'm writing, the pen breaks and the ink sprays on my favorite shirt. So I believe karma is not just something that happens to you on a huge scale. It happens on patterns, small patterns, every single day. Everything you do, your hair gets caught in the door, your shirt rips, you trip, you break your leg out of nowhere. So I believe this is all karma on a daily basis. That's why, because I believe in this, I watch the way I act and the way I talk with every single person I interact with, because I'm worried. I don't want anything bad to happen to me, even on a small scale. Even if it's like me tripping on the stairs, I don't want that, because I don't know what's going to happen. So when you are aware of that kind of energy, slowly your subconscious mind gets brainwashed and you become unconditionally good and kind to people without even planning. So my final thought on this is kindness and giving, sadly nowadays is a quote on Instagram or a tattoo on someone's body. But it's a trend that makes you look good and makes people like you more or pay attention to you more. But it's a shame, because that's not what it is. It's something embedded inside, and you don't need to prove it to anybody. You don't need to wear it on your sleeve and make the whole world know you've done something good. But it's something embedded in you inside, and it's part of who you are, and it's part of everything you do in your life. Whether you start a business, interact with people, bump into a stranger, somebody asks for help, even if you're busy, it becomes part of your nature. It becomes normal to the extent that you don't even notice it anymore. And people tell you, oh, you're too sweet. You're too kind. You're over this. You're like, oh, I am. I didn't even realize it. You forget yourself in the process, and it becomes part of who you are. It possesses you. And I love it. And I don't want to be any other person.
You're incredibly motivated. And that makes you absolutely fascinating. What I have come across, I don't know if you have a similar experience, is that motivated people and the people who are ready to go beyond their comfort zone and change the world, change their industry, yeah, influence the way things happen, are only a small minority. And, you know, often I wonder, is motivation something that we are being born with? Is it something that we learn? And how can we motivate other people? I know that you're wearing many other hats. You're also in the Sharjah Business Chamber, and you're very active in supporting and promoting business and trade and commerce. And when we talk about entrepreneurship, motivation is a key factor. So how do we get people motivated?
In the beginning, when I sat with a lot of people and I asked them what inspires you, what motivates you, it was always a place or a person. It was always this girl, that guy. It was always that place, being here, doing that. So, and then I realized the more I heard it, people think that to be inspired or motivated, it has to be either a person or a place, which is a complete damaging experience, because that place and that person can leave at any time. Then I sat with myself and I started thinking, I was like, okay, how can I be motivated, happy, and inspired without depending on others or places or people? Because they're not gonna last. They might leave me at any second. So I realized that when you love yourself, you really need to learn how to love yourself and to give yourself the love it needs and give yourself the attention it needs and give yourself like the way you speak with yourself. Like, it's funny how I watch how I speak to my friend because I don't want to hurt her feelings. But then when I am in front of the mirror, I'm like, oh, you're stupid. You're dumb. You did this. You did that to myself. So I'm not ashamed of speaking to myself like that, but I'm ashamed of speaking to other people worried I would lose them. So then I understood that, listen, before I fix anything in my life, I got to fix my relationship with me first. And I went through a process. I learned how to be balanced internally, clear internally, forgiving towards myself for everything I put myself through throughout my life that went wrong. And when you forgive yourself, you don't need closure. You don't need any sort of closure, because closure is just someone reading the back of the book for you while you can just read it yourself. You know what I mean? So you can tell the story just by reading the book. I don't need a synopsis to understand everything. So you realize that you really need to fix how you treat yourself, how you look at yourself before fixing anything out there. And I worked on it and I learned how to love myself and I learned how to control the way I talk to myself. So instead of like calling myself stupid when I do dumb things, I joke around with myself. Like I tell myself, oh, Sarah, that was silly. You know what? But it's cute. It's fun. You're human. You do mistakes. It's okay. It's completely normal. Don't be harsh on yourself. I literally have conversations in front of the mirror with myself. And I've never in my life felt so good because I felt like I needed it more than affirmation from people and acceptance from people. And I talk as if like, I know some people like say, oh, that's crazy. It's not crazy. I'm not hallucinating. I'm talking to myself. Inside this body, there's a soul. I'm talking to myself. There's nothing wrong with me intellectually having a conversation with myself. So I started talking to myself in a kinder way, loving myself more, understanding that I cannot pour from an empty cup. I cannot give love if I don't have any. So then in the process, I found the answer to how can I be motivated and inspired without having that be a person or a destination? And then I found that when you're self-sufficient and you love yourself, you are your biggest motivation. You are your biggest inspiration. And I found out that it's okay as a human being for you to sometimes shut down and to not be inspired and motivated. It's completely normal. A lot of people panic. They panic. I'm not motivated. I'm not inspired. What's wrong with me? Is it the end of how I feel? Is it the end of my creativity? No, you're a human being. Even a laptop, when it's on for a while, it needs to be shut down to restart. If a machine needs it, you think a human being doesn't need it? You need it. It's fine to be demotivated sometimes, but if you're self-sufficient, you pick it up right away and you don't need anyone to inspire you or motivate you. Anything. And a person who seeks inspiration and motivation finds it everywhere around them. I can sit down and look at the screen right here and wow, I'm inspired. I'm at the colors, it inspires me. So because inside, internally, I'm clear, I have a peace, I have a balance, everything around me inspires me. Everything. It can be a tree, it can be a flower, it can be anything. It can be a show I watch, but I am self-sufficient. So before, when I used to do interviews, people asked me, who's your biggest role model? I used to give names. And to be honest, I started very young, so I never had a role model starting young. At 15, I didn't even know what a role model was. But, and that was the most critical time in my life because I was young, vulnerable, and I didn't understand anything and I didn't have the educational background to run these businesses. So that time, no one was there for me. And then I realized, I'm like, why am I saying that person, this person is my inspiration, my role model? I started changing my answer for the past 2 years. Every time somebody asks me, who's your biggest role model, who's your biggest inspiration, I say me. And I always say, I'm not saying it because I'm egoistic or I'm a narcissist. I'm saying it from a place of self-love because I failed, I've succeeded, I've lost people, I've lost money, I've lost businesses, I started all over again, I was down, I was up, I was down, I was up. And I was the only person that never left me. I was always there for me, and I believed in me, and I picked myself up, and I did, and I did, and I did. So it doesn't come out of me as a narcissist, but it comes out of me as I love myself and I was there for myself and I stood up to everything and I'm still standing here and I became who I want to be and I still have much more to achieve. And after saying something like that, but not just saying it, but believing in it, you feel so good. You feel like I don't know, what do they call the happiness hormone, like dopamine, serotonin, whatever. You feel like a rush of adrenaline in your body because it just internally, your body, your mind, your soul needs to hear that, needs to understand that. That tap on the shoulder, that thank you need from people, that affirmation, that acceptance, you don't need it from anybody, you need it from yourself. I am never, ever ashamed. When I do something wrong, I don't think of, oh, did somebody see me? Oh my God, did they hear? I don't care about what people think. They don't pay my bills in the end of the day, right? But I care about what I think of myself. So when I want to do something wrong, I don't say, usually in people's mind is, oh, what if people know? The first thing that I tell myself is, am I okay with this? Is this okay for me to do? Will I feel bad after it? So I question myself and my ethics, whether I'm okay with this or not. So people don't affect me in any way. Their opinion doesn't. My opinion of myself does. If I was embarrassed, I'm embarrassed because I can't do that in front of myself, to myself, not because people are going to make me feel embarrassed. So it's so important. You realize that you can be a big source of motivation and inspiration to yourself the minute you start to love yourself, and the minute you understand your value and your worth, and the minute you understand that you can't love a husband, you can't love a lover, you can't love a child if you don't love yourself. Friends, family, kids, they don't need somebody. A child doesn't need a mother, they need a happy mother. And if you're not happy, you cannot give. You cannot make anyone happy. You'll be miserable. So yeah, it's self-suicide basically. It's soul suicide basically when you do that to yourself. So, and this is how I discovered that happiness and motivation and inspiration is not a destination or a person, and it should never be. Never. Happiness should never be a destination or a person, ever. It should be you. It should be a switch, a mind switch. It should be your choice, your time, your pace, your space.
You have covered me, and of course I have so many other questions, because I think that, you know, this conversation with you is super mind stimulating. But I guess the final question would be, and I welcome you, of course, to give your own message, first of all, because I would like you to kind of summarize, if you like, your wisdom into one message. Let's say that you have one important thing to share. You shared many important things, but what would be, if you like, the top one? And another thing, you talked about, you know, children, you talked about your son. Has your son ever surprised you or changed you or changed the way you think in any way?
Yeah. So I'll answer my child's question first. When I got pregnant, I immediately after delivering, I was a single mom for like 4 years. And I had to raise my son on my own. And me being an advocate for women, and gender equality, I started teaching my son all these things since he was one. I would talk to him about things and everyone's like, are you crazy? He doesn't get it. No, you're his subconscious. His conscious mind doesn't get it because he's a child, but his subconscious mind gets it, and it builds character when he grows up. So I implanted ethics in my child since he was 1 year old, putting seeds of ethics all over his body. And I knew that these seeds will grow one day and build character. A lot of people told me when you give birth and when you become a mother, especially women, that this is the end of your dreams. This is the end of the journey of vision. This is the end of everything. And you have to be just a mother, and they will take all your time, and they will, like, basically your dreams are going to be executed with no trial. But that wasn't true. That is the stereotype. That is what everyone tells you and tries to sell you. So this can remain a man's world, but that's not the truth, because I gave birth and they told me women need like at least 45 days to relax, maternity leave and all that. And I was like, I don't get it. I was like, why are we set with ideas and thoughts made by other people for us, and we have to live by them, and still wanting gender equality, still wanting to go out there, still wanting to live our dreams? I gave birth a week later. I was out. My child was in a bag. I was working. I breastfed in break times. I did what I did. I gave a speech for LinkedIn for 300 people carrying my kid on my shoulder. I never saw my son as an obstacle. My son was my biggest inspiration. He made me kinder. He switched on my empathy and sympathy buttons. He put them on. And he made me a better person. He made me look at life differently. Most importantly, before him, while I was pregnant and before him, I had one company. After him, I had eight. So whoever tells you your child is the end of your dreams is complete like lies that are sold to women so they can remain the way they are and to be brainwashed. Nope, I went out, I was working, I worked harder, my kid was with me. I never saw my kid as a distraction. My son surprises me every day with how emotionally intelligent he is. You know why? Because from day one, he was in the meeting rooms, he was listening to all these things, and he saw bigger things than he could see. And at the same time, because he was with me everywhere, I also dedicate time for him where I'm only one-on-one with him. And a lot of mothers tell me, oh, you only give 2 hours a long time one-on-one with your kid, that's not enough. That's 20% of your life, of your day. That's not good. It's bad. I mean, who are you to judge me, and who are you to tell me how to build my life-work balance? You should create your life-work balance, and you should love it. You should live by it, because I'm pretty sure everyone's trying their best. So they made me feel like these 2 hours were so bad, and that I'm doing such a bad job as a mom. But then I looked at some of them. Yeah, they do spend 24 hours at home with their kids doing nothing, but they're on their phone and watching TV, or on their iPads, on their laptops. So I choose quality over quantity. These 2 hours that I'm with my kid, my face is painted, my hands are dipped in paint, we're painting, we're drawing, we're stitching, we're singing, we're dancing, nonstop, like uninterrupted. So I believe in quality, not quantity. It's not about being 24 hours with your kids, it's about giving quality time to your kids. So my son surprises me every day. Like the other day I was in a business meeting and he just opened the fridge in the office, grabbed a bottle of lemonade. And he was like, guys, I have a new business. And he's only like 4. He's like, I have a new business. This is my lemonade stand and I'm going to sell you all lemonade. And then they were like, how much is the lemonade for? He was like, $50. They were like, $50 for a lemonade is too expensive. So then I started laughing because I was like, oh my God, he doesn't understand it, but I'll teach him all of that and everything, the value of money and everything, and how to become a good salesman. But then he shocked me. What he did is he was like, okay, I'm going to give you guys all lemonade for free. They were like, oh wow, that's so nice. He grabs the glass and he puts this much lemonade inside for each. And they were like, only this much? He's like, yeah, it's free. They tried it. The lemonade was so good. And then they asked for more and they paid for it. So I was like, how on earth did you manage to think like that? But this is all the doings of me when he was a kid, when I was talking to him continuously. He sat down when he was 1.5, listening to me negotiating money, talking to my employees about how to do sales, how to negotiate, how to use emotional intelligence to get the work done and everything. And I see the results now. He was a child, but I see it now. But then my dad, when he sees my kid, he goes like, oh my God, that was you when you were a kid. You see how scared you are? This is us, me and your mom, when you were a child. You scared the hell out of us because you were like that. So I guess, you know, it's your children are your future generation. And to be honest, if you think of it in this way, you will stop playing around a lot and you will start talking to them more, seriously.
And that kind of, you know, concludes this interview in the most fantastic way, because first of all, it's his mother's son. And clearly we can see that, you know, entrepreneurship and this idea about building a business, it's something that comes very natural. But of course, he's there with you in your business meetings, in the boardroom. So he picks up those signals. And that's a very interesting way to raise a kid and to plant those seeds of entrepreneurship, ethical entrepreneurship and social impact and meeting people and not be scared of people or presenting themselves in the most amazing way. Is there anything else that you would like to add to this interview?
I would just like to say one thing. The reason I wake up every day and do this, every single day, multitask, speeches, webinars, watching a child, doing businesses, running teams and all that, and being on 2 government boards. The reason why I wake up every day doing all of that is because I know, like, this is my biggest motivation every morning. I know that today might be my last day. And I know that once I'm gone, I can't come back to try things, to fix things, to do things, to take chances and opportunities. So my biggest inspiration, knowing we only live once, like it drives me crazy. It makes me want to do everything every day, everything. And if you really believe that this life is one shot and you can't come back and fix it, you will do whatever it takes to discover who you are, what your potentials, what can you do, what can't you do. You will take every single risk that comes your way because you know that tomorrow you might not be here. And this is my biggest inspiration. And as I said, failure doesn't intimidate me because failure is just a imaginary wall we build in our head. And nobody can help you take that wall down but you. So just like you built it brick by brick, take it down brick by brick and be vulnerable and don't be scared to fail because failure is just a missing ingredient. That's it. It's just go back and try differently. It's not go back. It's not made for you. You're not made for this. Don't even try to come back here. This is not for you, man. Get out of here. It's not that. It's not a rejection. It's someone telling you, go back. You have a missing ingredient. And I have a business, it's my business in LA. I failed in doing it 5 times. The 6th time it worked. Imagine I gave up the 3rd or the 4th. I would have never known how successful I would have been. So failure either teaches you or beats you. You decide what you want to do with it.